Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The first time rivals from the same city have met in a European Cup or Champions League final.
You could just see to the right the white of the Real Madrid supporters and just literally took my breath away. Cristiano, I think, heard it and he just turned and looked over to his shoulder and said, Paul, don't worry.
Modric to swing it in and Sergio Ramos in the 93rd minute saves Real Madrid.
There was talk at the time that the kit man of Atleticos like got the box out next to the dugout of the celebration t-shirts ready. It was getting to that point. It's now or never.
And Gareth Bale to put Real Madrid ahead. Look at Marcelo going on and on and on. And this time scoring. It's 4-1. Cristiano Ronaldo has his goal in the final.
Yeah, it looks good as well, you know, when you took that top off. I thought about taking my top off and waving it around my head at the end of the game, but it wouldn't have looked quite like that, I tell you.
2014, the year of Gangnam Style, when Pharrell got happy and the world cooled down with the Ice Bucket Challenge. It was the year of the World Cup in Brazil, of Luis Suarez having his Chiellini al dente, and Germany having Brazil on toast before beating Argentina in the final. In the Champions League, 2014 was the year of the All Madrid final in Lisbon. Real against Atletico, the first time we'd ever had two clubs from the same city meeting in this game of games. And at the centre of all the Madrileño madness was one English observer, Paul Clement, assistant manager to Carlo Ancelotti that night, who joins us today. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. First of all, quite an evening that must have been in Lisbon.
A pleasure to be speaking to you, James, and reminiscing about something that's now, you know, 9 years ago. I had a little look back through it last night, and yeah, it was nice, bring back some nice memories, and looking forward to talking to you about that. Ended up being a magical night, but was very close to not being so.
It was such a Madrileño night. It couldn't have been more Madrid, really. Did it feel a bit surreal for you, the guy from Wandsworth, being at the heart of it all?
It was a little bit. I mean, you know, I never thought that I'd get into that position, particularly because a few years earlier as well, it was 2009, I was coaching at Chelsea and we were playing Barcelona in the semi-final and we drew 0-0 in the Nou Camp. Gus Hiddink was the manager. And in the return game, we went 1-0 up with Michael Essien. And I think a lot of people will remember the game because of some of the refereeing decisions that went against us. Mm-hmm. The game ended with Iniesta right at the death getting an away goal and we went out. And the feeling I had after that was, well, will I ever, ever get a chance to get that close again to a Champions League final? Fortunately, is it 4 years later that I did? We had a wonderful semi-final victory against Guardiola's Bayern, who were a fantastic side. He had them playing really well. They dominated the Bundesliga that year. We won 1-0 in the Bernabeu, and we, you know, there's always that doubt, will that be enough going to Munich? We played amazing in the second leg, winning 4-0, 5-0 on aggregate. It was a thumping victory. Set plays, counter-attacks. We played really, really well. So there we go. We got that chance again. And it was a great feeling to be going to the final. And I'm playing against Atletico as well. See, big rivals. Yeah. And over the 2 years, so I'm talking 2013 to 2015, this is really strange and probably never happened again in my career. We played Atletico Madrid 13 times over the two-year period, because we drew them in Copa del Rey, we drew them in the Champions League final, and then the following year in the Champions League quarterfinal. We had them in the Spanish Super Cup, and then you obviously play them twice in the league. When we played them in the final in the first year, it was the fifth time we played them, because we beat them in the Copa del Rey semi-final, and then we played them twice in the league. And in the league, we'd lost at home 1-0, and we drew 2-2 away, won comfortably in the Copa del Rey over the two legs. I think it was 5-0 over the two legs. But tough, tough team, really tough. It was an amazing thing that, you know, basically all the football fans of Madrid just decamped across to Lisbon. You can drive quite easily. Amazing to see all the fans on the street, the white, obviously, of Madrid and the red and white of Atletico. It was special. It was a special final.
Yeah, it really was. And as you say, it so nearly went the wrong way for your side of the game. The kind of bare bones of your career, your father was a professional player. I think your brother's a professional player as well. You were a PE teacher while you were doing your badges. How did you go from that in Sutton, I think, to being on the bench in the Champions League final?
I mean, like you've mentioned already, I was born into a football family, so I was always around football and would have loved to have been a professional footballer, but didn't quite have the talent to make it. So quite early on, I made a call, if you like, that I wanted to have a career in sport. And I always found my PE teachers very inspirational. Looked up to them, loved a lot of sports, not just football. So I thought, I'm gonna try and become a PE teacher. So I went to university and then I did an extra year postgraduate certificate of education where I did my training years as a teacher, and I moved into my first job as a secondary school teacher. But alongside that, I still had a great love of football as well as playing at a university level and then on league level. I decided to embark quite early on my coaching certificate. So I was at university when I did my what was the old prelim FA badge, and I loved it. I loved it, and it tied really well into teaching and education, coaching. For me, they're the same thing. Teaching and coaching are the same. Working as and learning to become a teacher, you develop a lot of skills in planning, in communication, in organisation, and then to specialise in the football side as well. They really worked hand in hand. The first sort of chance that I got to work at a professional football club was really the introduction was when I was with my brother. He was, I think, 13 or 14 at the time. Really good young player. Hadn't signed any forms with any particular club. Went for trials at the FA National School. He got in. He was the year underneath Jamie Carragher at the school. Jody Morris was the same year as my brother. Michael Owen was the year younger. So it was a fantastic period of talent at the school at the time. And Chelsea wanted to sign him. And I went along to the meeting about him discussing signing forms. And they asked me what I did. And I said, I was a teacher and I'm learning to be a coach. And they said, well, why don't you come down and work at our Centre of Excellence? And that was my start. That was how it started, 1995. So I worked part-time at Chelsea for 5 years alongside my first 5 years in secondary school teaching. And at that point, I decided, I really want to try and have a career full-time in football. And I left Chelsea and went to join Fulham full-time.
Paul, so you went into a meeting with your brother with the prospect of him being taken on into the Chelsea youth system. And in the course of that, they basically offered you a job. What did you think? You weren't expecting anything like that when you went in.
No, not at all. Yeah.
What did you think when they turned around and said, by the way, would you like a job at one of the top clubs in the land?
It was great. And it was, I think a lot of life's about timing. I was in the right place at the right time. I also think that, I was ready for that opportunity as well, with the teacher training and also, started on that journey of doing my coaching licenses as well. The timing was nicely aligned for both parties. So it was a great start for me. A brilliant club, a club that I was at 5 years initially. And then after going to Fulham for 6 years, I returned there. And that's really where my sort of career accelerated, 2006, when I returned to Chelsea.
All right, with Gus Hiddink to begin with, and then Carlo Ancelotti comes along, and you have this incredible run with him of Chelsea, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich. That's quite a list.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. When Carlo first came to Chelsea, I was actually the reserve team coach. I'd stepped up temporarily to assist Gus, who was in on an interim basis. But when Carlo was appointed, I thought that I was going to be going back to coach the reserve team. I'd only been doing it 6 months because I was previously the youth team coach. Frank Arneson, Peter Kenyon at the time said, look, Carlo needs another coach. Ray Wilkins was going to stay on as assistant. They asked whether I'd be interested. That was a great opportunity. We went away on pre-season tour to America, and it was a little bit like a trial, if you like, that Carlo was going to have a look at me and see if he liked me as a coach. And also for me, would I feel comfortable? And initially I thought, probably best that I go back to the reserves. I hadn't been long out of youth football, really. Carlo said, no, I want you to be with me. And Now, once he said that, that was the start of seven years with him, where we went from not knowing each other really at all to becoming very close and are still great friends to this day.
Well, that's magnificent. Just for ignorant people like me, the manager does one set of things and the coach does another. Could you just break down what you would be doing and what Carlo would be doing? Say at Real Madrid, for example, how did that break down?
I mean, we worked very closely together. And I think that relationship built and developed and got closer as well over time. We got to know each other better. He knew more about what my skills were and how I could help and assist him. I mean, it was a pleasure to work with Carlo over that period. I really enjoyed his company. We had a great time. He, I think, saw in me someone that was quite organized, good at planning, good communicator. Where Carlo was very strong was with, you know, tactical lineup, understanding the strengths and the qualities of his players and how to put them in a system, about managing the dressing room, different personalities, the different cultures. On a tactical side, on the training pitch, being able to get that idea of how he wants his team to play. And I really supported him in getting that organised, helping him organise that. And a lot of stuff around the main tactical work, whether that be technical exercises, different drills, and just really helping the organisation and flow of the training. That was a big part of what I did. And also, which fortunately in this season as well, was, you know, organise the set play, both defensively and offensively. It worked well for us, yeah. It worked well for us, James. In the end, across the semi-final and the final, set plays were massive for us. Massive.
They certainly were. All right, well, so one day then, I think you'd previously said, and this might have been when you were still at Chelsea, that Real Madrid was your dream. Going to Real Madrid was your dream. Is that right? And if so, what was it like when you got the call saying, we're off to Real Madrid?
I actually remember it very well. We were at Paris Saint-Germain at the time. We'd won the title. The title hadn't been won by PSG for 19 years. It was incredible. When you look at the recent history, you know, I think everyone expects PSG to win the title every year. But when we arrived, they hadn't won it for 19 years. So it was the start of the new PSG, if you like. The Qatari investment fund had put money into the team about 1 year earlier. We'd gone, there was an influx of, you know, new, highly talented players. We did well, we won the title. But at the end of that year, Real Madrid had made contact with Carlo. And when he told me, my jaw nearly hit the ground. What a feeling. But from that moment on, all I remember was, because you get a lot of this in football, there's some talk of what might happen. And a lot of things never happen. Mm. So there was that fear, if you like, that it was just talk. But you so want it to happen. The biggest club with the greatest history in world football. So there were some anxious weeks leading up to that, but you know, it was finally done, and I flew across to Madrid with Carlo when he signed his contract, and it really was a wow moment for me. I think everyone can see the size and the history of the club from the outside. When you get to see it from the inside as well, it really is quite incredible. From the moment they walk you into the boardroom at the stadium, and at that moment there was 9 European Cups on display in the cabinet. That was the sense that I took away from it right away. It's how important the European Cup is to Real Madrid. Incredible club.
So another measure of the status, the grandeur of the club, is the fact that they also provided another assistant for Carlo, who was Zinedine Zidane. What was it like working with him? Did you work particularly closely with him? And what language did you all speak? Because did you speak any Spanish before you got to Madrid?
No, I didn't. That's that was interesting. Yeah, to meet him. Carlo knew Zizou because he coached him at Juventus. So they had some relationship as coach player, but now it was coach, assistant coach, and me as another assistant. I mean, I like Zizou right from the start. A shy man, quite introverted, but with a lot of still with a lot of charisma and a lot of aura. And actually, the way we started communicating at the start is quite strange how it worked, was that we spoke in French. My broken French. Anyway, that was the way that me and him started. Carlo would have spoken quite a lot of Italian with Zizou. But in the end, as I suppose my French regressed and my Spanish improved, I would try to speak with Zizou in Spanish. But we worked very closely together day to day in the planning of training and the preparation for games right up until the final. I actually saw a picture last night when I was looking through that period of me and him sitting down, scribbling out some ideas for the final organisation of the planning meeting for the set plays going into that game. So yeah, we worked very closely together. And in the second year, he wanted to coach on his own. So he coached the B team, and then obviously went on to coach the senior team and did amazingly well, especially in the Champions League.
Yeah, especially in the Champions League. Let's talk a little bit about season 2013-14. Yeah. Third in La Liga, you win the Copa del Rey. There's that amazing Gareth Bale goal. Yeah. 2-1 over Barcelona in the final. But most important of all, it had always been the unspoken mission, probably the spoken mission, actually, from the day you arrived. La Decima, the 10th European title. 12 years they've been waiting for it. And the campaign in Europe begins pretty well. I mean, looking at some of the scores, you're a really free-scoring team. It was 6-1, 4-0 the first two games. Group stage, you fly through, scoring 20 goals, 5 wins, 1 draw. Last 16, destroyed Schalke 9-2 on aggregate. Yeah. Another German side, Dortmund, who are a little bit more arduous in the quarterfinals, 3-2 on aggregate. And then, as you mentioned, oh my word, Bayern in the semi-finals. And this is Bayern, who are the defending champions. Bayern, who are under the tutelage of one Pep Guardiola, and a narrow 1-0 lead from your home match. You cannot have been expecting anything like the performance that you guys put in away in Munich.
No, it was an incredible performance, like you've just mentioned there. I mean, yeah, was the 1-0 in Madrid going to be enough? Because they had the better of the play. I mean, they were a strong team. They had more possession. They created more dangerous chances. So it was a steely victory from us, really. I think we nicked one on a counter. Benzema scored. So going away was always going to be a very, very tough game. But we started so well. One was a corner, one was a wide free kick. Both goals from Ramos, two headers. Really good headers. Put us in a great position. And then we got another one before the half on a counter-attack. And really, that was a big strength for the team. Was in set plays and was in counter-attacking with Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo on the forward line. And then in the second half, and this is the, you know, a lot of detail goes into these games. We spoke about the jumping wall of Bayern. So we had a central free kick, and some of our analysis was that the wall does jump. Hmm. Ronaldo took it on board brilliantly because the wall jumped and he punched the ball underneath the wall, which is not an easy skill to do, to keep it low and get enough speed on it to get to the goal. It buried in the corner. Neuer was like planted. He couldn't even dive to get it.
And you'd worked on that with him?
Well, when I say worked on it, it was more in a point of analysis that when we showed the video, you could see quite clearly that on central free kicks, Bayern were jumping and that there was going to be space. But then it's under the pressure of the moment. It's Cristiano saying that there's going to be space underneath the wall and just believe that that space will open up. And then he's got to execute it. And he did.
This was the days before draft excluders.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Innocent times. All right. Well, there you were. You were through to the final. With that resounding victory. The other semi-final was Atletico Madrid against Chelsea. Did you want Chelsea?
You know, I think I would have felt strange about it being Chelsea, having only left there a couple of years before, still knowing a lot of people on the staff. That would have been quite strange. So in a way, I was pleased. I would have been pleased for a lot of the people that I knew that it, and it's a club that I still love a lot, if they'd got there. But they had won it a couple of years earlier. So we were okay with playing Atletico in the final.
Yeah, well, I'm sure for many at Madrid, it was the perfect thing to win La Decima against Atletico. What before the game, is you and Zizou and Carlo kind of sorted out your tactics and how you were going to get the better of a team who'd really posed you problems that season? What were the big decisions for you?
The big decisions going into the game were the amount of fatigue in the team, a lot of players carrying niggly injuries. There were some doubts going into the game, and these were the doubts we had. Xabi Alonso suspended from the semi-final. Big, big loss. He picked up a yellow card, which means he was going to be suspended for the final. So it was what to do in that space in midfield. And the issue that we had in midfield was that Sami Khedira, earlier in the season, had gone away with the national team and ruptured his anterior cruciate ligament. And he was just coming back. So was nowhere near 100% fit, but good player, experienced player. Was he going to play, or would we have gone for Iarramendi, who we'd bought the previous summer from Real Sociedad, who was a good player, but probably not at that level of Alonso, Khedira, Modric? So would it be Khedira, who's not 100% fit but more experienced? Would it be the younger Iarramendi? There were also issues to Pepe at centre-back, who was carrying an injury. He ended up not making it, and Varane played at the back with Sergio Ramos. There were also issues to Ronaldo, who was carrying a small injury, and also Benzema. Key players. they both made it to the final. They both started the game, Benzema and Ronaldo. Benzema wasn't able to complete the whole game. Benzema came off on, when was it? He came off on like 80 minutes, so he did pretty well to make that. And this is sometimes the issue when you get to a final like that. Considering we'd played all the league games and got to the final of the Copa del Rey, the Champions League final was the 61st game of the season.
Wow.
Now, if you add that to pre-season games plus the international games the lads are playing, you're talking 75 games, which is a shame when you get to a big final when you want your players fresh and in good condition to play a great final. But I'm sure that that was the case for Atletico as well. And it was, in fact, because Diego Costa had injured his hamstring, I think, maybe 7 to 10 days before the final against Barcelona, where he came off. And we're thinking, there's no way he's going to play the final if he's hurt his hamstring. But he made the final, which we're a little bit like disappointed in a way because he's such a good player. But at the same time, he can't be fit. He can't be 100% fit. And he was withdrawn from the game on 9 minutes, which was, you know, not a good situation for them either. So they were the big calls. They were the situation going into the game. We didn't have a lot of time to prepare tactically because you're just coming off the back end of, you know, regular season. There wasn't many days. It was more about recovery, recuperation, and getting the lineup right. And in the end, Khedira was the one that was chosen to play midfield.
The night before the game, you give a tactical briefing to the team. I'm curious as well. You got an audience there looking out at you, who Sergio Ramos, Cristiano Ronaldo, Marcelo, all the big names of possibly the biggest club in the world. To what extent was your background as a secondary school teacher actually really useful in terms of delivering to that kind of audience?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, James. I think because what I'd been through previously, not so much as a teacher and an educator, but more what the journey from academy football at Chelsea to a fantastic team in Chelsea's first team dressing room, 2009 to 2011. That was a big, big step for me in my career. And just from a confidence point of view, from a personality point of view, that transition was big and at times tough. You know, that changing environment, the culture's totally different to what a youth development culture's like compared to a first team environment where it's about winning.
So most people, I think, would really feel, I don't know if you want to call it imposter syndrome or a lot of nerves in that kind of situation. How did you feel? That night in front of the Real Madrid players, how did you feel?
I felt okay at that point because I'd gone through those years at Chelsea and at Paris Saint-Germain as well. I was in a strong enough position now to be able to stand in front of those players, impart my knowledge, to help Carlo. And I got to say, the players were great. And, you know, it was a struggle at times because I'm having to, you know, deliver some of the work in a different language. The players appreciated that. They understood that. They knew I was trying. Didn't always get it right, but they helped. I remember Sergio used to help me. Cristiano would help me where I'd get a word wrong and they'd say in English to me, particularly Cristiano, you know, what is he trying to say there, Paul? And I'd just, he'd help me. So standing in front of the players on the day of the game, delivering the set play talk it was a nerve-wracking experience because I knew I had the details right, but the importance of being able to deliver that, especially in a different language, in a big game like this, where you don't want to be getting things wrong and there to be any confusion, was a good experience.
Set pieces were such a huge part of what Atletico had done that season, and they were to prove absolutely crucial in this. Was there a special film or anything? We had Yaya Touré on this show. He was talking about Pep Guardiola's gladiator montage that he played at the Rome final in 2009.
Yes, I remember seeing that.
Did you guys do anything special before you ran out at the Stadio de Luz?
Yeah, the club put together a great montage of our journey to the Champions League final, and also included in that was some of the history of the other victories in the past with some of the other great players. So it was really nice. Yeah, absolutely, very motivating experience going into the game. We were definitely up for it, that's for sure.
Having already had UEFA Champions League finals between teams from the same country, the 2014 final brought together two teams from the same city as Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid went head-to-head in Lisbon. Real were going in search of La Decima, the club's 10th European Cup win. Atletico had won La Liga a week earlier, but this was only their second European Cup final.
2009, you'd come so close, and here you were finally about to take the field for a Champions League final. You've mentioned in the past being in the tunnel, kind of looking down the tunnel and seeing the turf there.
Yeah.
And just feeling for a second that moment. And Cristiano Ronaldo turns around to you.
Yes, that's right. I remember it. I remember it so well. The tunnel at the stadium in Lisbon, Benfica Stadium, is actually quite short. So you enter into the tunnel from left and right. But when you get into the tunnel from the back of the tunnel to the pitch, is quite short. So literally, it was only like the 11 players from each team that were lined up looking outwards. But there was a little bit of space at the back behind our team, and so I stood. I had my back against the wall, looking out. You could see and hear the pre-game opening ceremony going on at the time. You could just see to the right the white of the Real Madrid supporters, and just a little bit to the left the Atletico supporters, and then the trophy was sitting on the podium, and it literally took my breath away. And Cristiano, I think, heard it. He heard me take a deep breath, and he just turned and looked over to his shoulder and said, "Paul, don't worry," like that. And it was a great moment. I mean, I wasn't even going to play the game, and he was super calm and ready to go and do the business.
Well, I can imagine there must have been so much tension.
Referee Bjorn Kuipers. Atletico take a risk with Diego Costa, their 36-goal striker. Despite his hamstring problems, Arda Turan ruled out by injury.
Let's talk about the game then. It all gets underway. As you mentioned, there's an early blow for Atletico Madrid when Diego Costa comes off.
And Diego Costa has lasted only 9 minutes. So that gamble has backfired spectacularly. He's obviously feeling the injury. He's been having horse placenta treatment to try to get ready. They took the risk, but they've had to use up a substitute very, very early.
Using that substitute early, maybe that plays a part in the way things go in extra time. I'm not sure, but one thing that is noticeable is that Real Madrid, and we mentioned how you've been scoring goal after goal, four in the second leg of the semi-final away at Bayern Munich, but not this time. What were Atletico doing that frustrated you, essentially?
Well, we knew. I don't think there were any real surprises in what they did tactically. In all the other games, they're very similar. They play 4-4-2, they sit quite deep, and they do it really well. They cover the distances really well. The distances between the different lines and the units is very, very compact. They're aggressive. A big strength of their team is their organisation defensively. They get the ball into the forward areas in a very methodical way, a very pragmatic way, and they win a lot of set plays. And that's where they were really, really strong. So not the most fluent, not the most attractive team, very robust, were great at what they did. I mean, they won the league that year. They're in a Champions League final. They were a fantastic side with a very, very strong personality in the manager, in Simone. We went through what they do in the set plays in a lot of detail. But on 36 minutes, they scored from a set play.
Gabby to swing it in. Back in by Juan Fran. Godin won the header! And I think that's in! I think that crossed the line! It's a goal! Diego Godin with the goal for Atletico Madrid.
It was a mistake from Casillas. The ball got cleared in the first phase. It came back into the box and he decided to come for it, but it really got caught in a bit of no man's land.
Well, Iker Casillas came for this and didn't get there.
And Godin got onto the ball in the air, and he just looped one over him, and he tried to recover to get it out of the goal, but didn't manage to do that. So you can imagine, from my point of view, someone had a lot of responsibility in the set plays, that if we were going to get beaten by a set play, it would have been devastating.
Once the whistle blows, how much is it just sitting and watching?
Yes and no. Yeah, you're not on the pitch, but you still think, as a coach and working with the manager, that you can affect things, whether that be a change in strategy, a change in personnel. And we still had half time.
They had another header shortly before that, but you go into the half-time break 1-0 down.
What a frustration so far for Carlo Ancelotti. Yeah, the fans who are celebrating at the moment, how they'd love this. They've always had to be the poor relations in Madrid.
What happens then? Do you talk? Does Carlo talk? Did Cristiano talk?
I used to always, when I was assisting Carlo, speak to the players more individually or in little groups after the coach had spoken. Carlo was brilliant at halftime. I don't think you could be in a more pressured situation than that. You're losing 1-0 in a Champions League final. it is potentially going to be the 10th in the club's history. They hadn't won it for 12 years before. We had a really good team. We'd had the upper hand in the most recent games, Copa del Rey semi-final against Atletico. They're a big rival of ours. You know, the stakes were high. The pressure was high. But he was super calm. Maybe not inside, because I've had these discussions with him before about, you know, a lot of people see him as like super calm character. But inside, there is a fire burning. And he feels pressure as much as anybody else. But he does have this demeanour of very calm and control, which is a great quality, because he did calm the players down. Gave him a little bit of tactical insight, weren't major things. We'd actually played not bad. So a lot of it was keep doing what you're doing, have belief, we'll get chances. I don't think anyone anticipated that the goal would come so late, though. We did have some other near misses.
Cristiano Ronaldo deflected, and Courtois watched that well. Comes the Real Madrid corner, it's not away. Ronaldo! His crossing, oh, wonderful chance for Ronaldo! And he could not finish it. Bale can use his speed here. He's got the better of Godin, but couldn't find the angle. And that's how it's gone for Real Madrid so far.
I remember the clock feeling like it's moving so fast.
Yeah.
And that's often the case when you go ahead in the game and you just want the whistle to blow, that the clock seems to go slowly. But when you're losing and you need more time,
right,
it seems to go so much faster. And I've never known a clock go so fast as that second half in Lisbon.
As you say, you'd had lots of chances. Cristiano Ronaldo has a free kick, yeah, which Courtois handled reasonably well. There was a series of other chances, but the goal just isn't coming. And you've scored all those goals throughout the season on the way to this game. But if you don't score one now, what all of those mean?
Yeah.
You get into, I mean, should we cut straight to it? The 90th minute, the board goes up to say how many minutes are going to be added on. It's a minimum of 5 minutes. At this point, are you still believing, Paul?
I don't even know if I had those like kind of thoughts. You're just, more than are you believing, you're hoping. You're hoping that you just get one chance. And football often does give you another chance. And it's whether in that big moment that it's going to be a little bit of luck or the ball's going to go on target.
Time against them. Isco turns it to the side. Di Maria blocked on the way through.
Having been doing the set plays for the whole season,
it will be a Real Madrid corner.
I know that. The chance of a scoring direct from a corner are actually very, very low.
Really?
Yeah, they're very low. As in, the ball gets delivered in and it's one contact and the ball's in the box. The ball's in the goal.
Right.
I think in the season, we'd maybe had two total. I think there was one earlier in the season. I think it was at Levante where Ramos has scored, and then there was the semi-final. There was the semi-final against Bayern. So probably two goals. So the chances are low.
But so just to set this up, you guys are racking up corner after corner in these essentially the 90s passed, and you've got 300 seconds probably to take this title and stop Atletico winning their first European title, almost as importantly.
There was talk at the time that the kit man of Atletico's like got the box out next to the dugout of the Champions celebration t-shirts ready. So, you know, it was getting to that point. You know, everyone's on their feet, both dugouts are on their feet. It's getting to that moment where it's now or never.
Some very, very anxious faces on both sides.
Did you have like a book of various kind of routines that you would do from a corner? Mm. What Ramos does, the run that he makes, I think it's Thiago who he essentially beats to the ball. Was that something that was planned? Was that a routine that you guys had worked on?
When I say routine, it was more about, you know, the thing is, when you get into that period of the game, when it's so late, you've had a number of corners before that already. It's not so much about running a scheme that you've done earlier in the game.
Mm.
It becomes, and it's like this now, you know, we here at Everton now, we normally have, and a lot of teams will have a certain corner that they do, first, second, third, fourth corner. But if you're getting 13 corners in a game, you're probably now just working on getting it into a good area, making some good runs. And of course, the organisation we've worked on, it was these players in the box. Modric, you're going to deliver the ball. These are the two players or three players on the edge of the box for second phase, stop counters. And this is the player that's back on the halfway line to just make sure we've got some balance. But, you know, that moment was all about big players in big moments. The delivery from Modric is perfect.
Modric to swing it in, and Sergio Ramos in the 93rd minute saves Real Madrid. Talk about last gasp.
Right at the end of a game, under pressure to deliver a ball like that, it takes some doing. The timing of Ramos's run, the jump, the execution, again, perfect. Anywhere else but in that bottom corner where it went, Courtois is going to save it. You know, he's 6'6" tall. He's got a massive reach. Anywhere else, he's going to save it. And Atletico have won the final. It was a big moment.
They were 90 seconds away.
Xabi Alonso, who is out of this game. The relief. Oh, the relief for Real Madrid. It goes to extra time.
So you've equalised. There's the break before extra time. You guys go into a huddle.
Yeah.
Atletico's players are basically just stretched out on the turf at this point. Why do you think Real Madrid were that much more composed than Atletico looked at that moment?
I think, from a psychological point of view, it was a killer blow.
Extra time. There's no question about it. The momentum now has to be with Real Madrid.
If you're 90 seconds away from winning the trophy and then the other team scores, the situation with Costa being substituted early on, you know, has affected what they can do in terms of changes. They've already made another change on 66 and another change on 83, so they've got no changes that they can do. We were fresher, we were in a better state of mind. I think at that point, it wasn't discussed, but you could feel, we're going to win now. We're going to win. It felt very differently a couple of minutes before, but at that moment, when we've got together at the end of normal time, it was just, I think, a matter of time before, you know, we went and got the goals.
The second period of extra time, if I recall correctly, when that Ramos header went in, do you remember what you did?
Yeah, I was down the touchline. I got there quite late, but I did arrive in the huddle. Quick few words, you know, come on, get to the end of the game. Get back in position, concentrate, because what you don't want to do is concede straight from the kickoff.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much done there. But yeah, it was a moment of like pure elation when that goal went in.
So the first period of extra time, there's a penalty shout for Real. And then there's a pretty remarkable sight. There's a pitch invader. Oh, hang on. It's Atletico Madrid's manager, Diego Simeone, runs on.
Now, what is Diego Simeone, the coach of Atletico Madrid, doing here? He's coming onto the pitch to remonstrate with the referee, Bjorn Kuipers. Atletico felt there was rather too much added time at the end of the match generally. Enough time for Real to equalise, but he's going to be in very hot water for that. You can't do that.
Amazing. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, I haven't. But, you know, it's one of those situations where the pressure and the emotion of the occasion, I can kind of understand it in a way, but that kind of behaviour can work one way or the other. You know, you've got one manager who's very like aggressive and emotional, another one who's like more calm and collected. And the calm and collected manager got the better on that evening.
He did. So the second period of extra time then is when it really, really turns, when the dominance starts to pay off, and a surging run from Angel Di Maria finds another willing head, this time belonging to Gareth Bale.
And Atletico need to keep their cool here a bit. His Di Maria, tremendous run from Di Maria, and Gareth Bale to put Real Madrid ahead.
What a season Gareth Bale had had.
Yeah, made a massive impact. Started a little bit slowly when he came, had a bit of an injury issue, but then scored in his first game and just got better and better as the season went on. Obviously, crucial goal in the Copa del Rey final, a memorable goal, a goal that will go down in history of that club.
That's the one where he runs off the pitch and back on again and leaves Real Madrid players in his dust.
Yes, yeah. So, and then in the final, you know, he was fit and in good shape. I mean, he was such a good athlete. I remember it well, like Di Maria breaking down the left, and it was like a shot cross that got a deflection. I mean, it just looped up lovely, and Gareth arrived at that back post, but he still had a bit of work to do, you know. It wasn't an easy header, but, you know, put it right in that top corner, and 2-1, there was no looking back after that.
Yeah. What about Di Maria? What was he like as a player to coach?
Really good, really good. Hardworking, athletic, and I think he gave the team great balance. Carlo always had this idea that when we first got to Madrid, that he wanted Cristiano to play as a striker, where he did end up and has ended up, you know, in his later years. But he didn't want him, because when you play on the left in 4-3-3, often you have to, you know, be coming back and defending, especially if a team plays an attacking fullback. And he didn't want him to have that responsibility. So he had an idea of him playing as a striker. But quite early on, I think he was even in the back end of pre-season when we first got there, he said to Carlo about, I'm not so comfortable there. I don't think I'm as effective with my back to goal and as a lead striker. I prefer to be, in off the left, facing the goal more, running at the goal, coming in on my right foot, arriving at the back post for crosses. So Carlo was great. He just said, listen, his most important thing is that you are comfortable. So he made a little adjustment, and what it meant was, because he didn't want him to have to do that tracking all the way back down the left side, he played him as a striker defensively. So we used to be 4-4-2 defensively, where Benzema and Ronaldo would be the two central strikers. And then we'd have a flat four across midfield. It meant that Bale went from right wing to right midfield. And then you just slide across one of the left midfielder, which was often Di Maria. This is why I mentioned this. So he would be a left of a three-man midfield with Alonso and Modric. So Alonso at the bottom, defensive central midfield, if you like. Modric on the right, Di Maria on the left in 4-3-3. Ronaldo left wing, Benzema through the middle, Bale on the right. But it changed to 4-4-2 defensively, and it meant that Di Maria had to slide out from being a left midfielder to a left-sided central midfielder. So he had a lot of work to do physically, but he was a really willing runner, and he did brilliant in that role.
Yeah, did brilliant in that game as well. Am I right in thinking that was his last game for Real Madrid, though? Because he moves to Manchester United that summer, no?
Yes, he did. He was sold that summer, which was a shame because he was a good player. But I think in the end, it worked out for both parties. We had Toni Kroos was incoming the next season. We had Isco, who club and Carlo wanted to play more. And Gil departed, but, he departed on a high, didn't he?
He certainly did. There were more goals to come in that Champions League final, even though Bale had finally put you ahead. A couple of minutes later, Marcelo, who'd been a substitute in the game after Cointrao, who got the nod.
Cointrao was had the nod over Marcelo a little bit at that point. I think he was just a little bit... Marcelo's a great player and has gone on and done magical things at Real Madrid. But at that time, he was just a little bit more solid defensively. And we had that, obviously, attacking threat of Di Maria on the left and Ronaldo as well. So he wanted a bit more stability at that point. But it was a great option then to bring into the game as a much more offensive, technical fullback.
Yeah.
And, fair play to him, because you can imagine how disappointed he must have been not to start the final, big player like Marcelo, but then to come in, get his goal, help lead the team to victory was great for him and great for the team.
The trophy seemed to have Atletico's name on it. Not so. Look at Marcelo going on and on and on, and this time scoring. And that surely is it. 3-1, Real Madrid out of the condemned cell.
And then 4-1. It's Ronaldo who wins a penalty.
Well, they're on wooden legs now here. Atletico, dispirited, demoralised. And to round it off, there is going to be a penalty for that challenge.
And scores it, which probably wasn't a big deal to him.
Cristiano Ronaldo to rub salt into gaping Atletico wounds. He does exactly that. It's 4-1. Cristiano Ronaldo has his goal in the final.
Nice to have that as well. Certainly, shirts off, lots of sui and flexing and all that kind of thing. He can seem a bit exaggerated, Cristiano Ronaldo, but he was a joy to work with. How was he to work with?
No, great. Fantastic to work with. We had a great, great working relationship. I loved working with him on the pitch, off the pitch, top class professional. I liked chatting with him. We used to talk about a wide range of topics. He's a very bright guy, multilingual, businessman, and just a fierce competitor. Never quite come across anyone like him. And he's still like it to this day, even though, he's older and his physical strength and capabilities are not what they used to be. Still a wonderful player and a great guy. And that penalty that he scored in the final was his 51st of the season.
Yeah.
Those numbers are just ridiculous. And the following season, you're thinking, God, 51, that's going to be tough to surpass. In the second season we were with him, he scored 60 goals. The numbers are just ridiculous. All kinds of goals as well. I mean, he was scoring free kicks, headers, left foot, right foot, inside the box, outside the box. The greatest player I've ever worked with, without question. Yeah, looks good as well. When you took that top off, he was in...
yeah, he was in shape.
I thought about taking my top off and waving it around my head at the end of the game, but it wouldn't have looked quite like that, I tell you.
17 in 11 Champions League games, a record for the season. Cristiano Ronaldo, brilliant. It's over. Real Madrid, on a night of drama in Lisbon, have won the Champions League for a record 10th time. La Decima is delivered at last.
What did you do at the end of the game, Paul?
Well, first thing was, you know, go straight to Carlo, and God, that was an emotional moment. It was brilliant, like just to give him a hug and, you know, what we'd all been through and the emotion of that. And then you just gradually, you know, you work around all the people that you've worked with and the players, and then you're looking up to the into the stand that people have come to support you, and it was a great moment, soaking it all in.
It was a long, it was a frustrating night. They had to wait till the 93rd minute to rescue the game. But in extra time, Real Madrid have pulled away to beat their City rivals. It looks emphatic on the scoreline, 4-1, but it doesn't begin to tell the story of this night when Atletico came so very, very close, only to fall away in the end. It's Real Madrid who are European champions.
And then you go back into the dressing room and, you know, there's photos and a little bit of drinking and pictures with the cup. And I remember really well, just a small group of players sort of congregating, sitting down in one of the corners, and it was Cristiano was there. And it was actually more of the Portuguese, Brazilian-speaking players, Cristiano, Marcelo, Contral, Pepe. And I was interested because they looked like they were quite deep in conversation, where there was a lot of like joy and celebration. And I went over to them and, you know, like, what are you talking about? And they were saying, we got to go and win this next year. I was like, oh my God, wow, this is incredible. What about that mentality? And I even myself, I was like, can we just enjoy this for a bit? You know, the journey's arduous and long, and just enjoy the celebration, because it'll soon be gone. And it was, you know, we ended up celebrating for a couple of days, but
right,
then it is gone. But the moment they just clicked like that, led by Cristiano, we got to go and win this again next year. The mentality shift was incredible. But we did have a couple of great days of celebrating, both when we returned to Madrid and...
Well, you went back that night, is that right?
Yes, yeah. And it wasn't until, I don't know, either 4:30, 5 o'clock, we were back in Madrid.
This was to get to the fountain, I imagine, was it?
Yeah, you take the open-top bus from along the Castellana into Cibeles, which is the main area with the fountain in the middle, and the streets were lined. They reckon there was 800,000 to a million fans.
At 4:30 in the morning?
At 4:30 in the morning. I've never seen anything like it.
Just finished their dinner, probably, in Madrid, but still.
They do eat late. It's incredible.
But just amazing. What was that like? So you were stood up on the top of the bus with the players?
Yeah, on the top bus with the trophy and, you know, waving to all the fans. You go into Cibeles and the captain puts the scarf around the neck of the sculpture, and then we headed back to the stadium. Was brilliant, so many people. And then you go home for a little while and then you're back up again, and they do a great thing where you take the bus into the city and it's to the town hall, you know, to the people of the city of Madrid. The fans are out again in the city centre, and then back to the stadium for a great celebration at the stadium, completely full, 80,000, parade the trophy. And then that's it, bum, done. Off on the holidays and a little bit of a break before you go again the next season.
They've won four Champions League trophies since, but my feeling would be that was the most important one. The one they've been, it'd been 12 years since they got to the final.
Yeah.
12 years of waiting to make it double figures, La Decima, and you won it, and you won it against the team they most wanted to beat in a final, I guess.
When we got to the town hall, I was walking in with Alvaro Arbeloa, who was a substitute for the final, but, you know, a really important player for Real Madrid. He said to me, Paul, we've just won the most important trophy in this club's history. You know, when there's a real Madrileño saying that to you, you get a feeling of how big and how important and what you've done. And looking back, it's special that we were part of that, part of the 10th. And we've got some nice memorabilia from it, obviously the photos, the memories, the medal. The club gave us a nice replica of the trophy, a mini one, which I have in my office at home. And also a gold watch with, you know, your name engraved on the back. And it was a Champions League winner from 2014. Really nice things. The club had a lot of class with doing things like that. They do things really well.
Do you ever go back to Madrid?
I have been back. I've been back a couple of times since, and always very welcoming. Emilio Butragueno and the president, Mr. Perez, always very nice. And I hope to be going back again, you know, sometime in the near future, get to see some familiar faces.
Yeah, maybe another Champions League final as well.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Remarkable. Many, many thanks for sharing that. And congratulations on an extraordinary final, one with a set piece.
Yeah, well, I won't be forgetting that one ever, that corner, the 93rd minute. But it was great, James. I enjoyed that, talking about it and reminiscing about something that's, you know, you don't really think about.
Do you not?
That much, because when you're in the job, no, not like I have done in this last hour, because, you know, you're busy with the present and helping the team that you're currently working with.
Also, the fact that it was abroad, the fact that it was at Real Madrid, the fact that it was such a glorious kind of little parenthesis, does it seem almost a little bit like a dream that happened?
Yeah, it does a little bit, yeah. Yeah, 9 years ago, time moves so fast. I think I've been at 4 or 5 different clubs since that point. Yeah, it's strange. It's strange. Now you've spoken a bit like that. So it was actually nice thing to do today, to talk through it and remember those times.
Anytime you want to talk about it again, Paul, I'm right here.
That's great, James. Thank you very much.
Pods.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.